listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolling.
And this is State of the Arts.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services. It's great to be here for our second show, Michael.
I know, second show.
Can you believe that?
May 31st, last Monday, the same time.
Same time, same bat channel.
We took flight.
And
I think we did pretty well.
I think we did. We had the lovely and talented Carol Lawrence with us on our last broadcast, and today we have the equally lovely and talented Jill Holden, who is with us. Hello, Jill. Good to see you.
Hi, Paul.
Hello, Jill.
Hi,
Michael. Using her radio voice.
I told her, don't use the radio voice.
We have a whole thing about radio voices that I got to share with you, but we're going to be talking to Jill later in the hour about Measure E, which is on the ballots in California.
So important.
Hugely important. And oddly enough, also an important topic to our call-in guest today, the legendary Carol Channing.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Very, very exciting.
How exciting. Okay, but you know what? There's some things that we need to do first. And I want to tell you just a little bit about, you know, first of all, in the week that's transpired, Paul, what's gone on with you? I know that I've had amazing experience with emails coming in from all over the country.
I've gotten emails. I've gotten phone calls. I've had people that really, I think a lot of people didn't even know this particular architecture exists. Jill, did you know about internet radio and how prominent it is?
I'd heard of it, but I really didn't know the whole story.
Neither did I.
Well, it's where, you know, broadcasters are living now. I mean, this is where they're going to, as television is, right?
Yeah.
You missed Desperate Housewives last night. You can see it today on ABC.
You got the Hulu thing, and it's completely telling you everything.
The Hulu thing.
Michael, you were saying that you've gotten emails not only from home, but from
Europe.
Abroad.
Europe. I told you not to call me abroad. Not in this city. No, not L.A. Sorry. New York, yes, but not this
city. I'm old school. Speaking of broads, would you do your Harvey Fierstein impersonation?
Oh, Paul, this is Harvey Fierstein, and I'm calling in to tell you. Or do I sound like your mother?
You sound like my mother. Let's have Harvey Fierstein have a conversation with my
Harvey. It's so nice to meet you. So nice to meet you too, Mrs. Stroll.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. Bruno, get the car.
The other thing we want to say that there are two groups that benefit from any advertising sponsorship that we get. We give a portion of that to two organizations, one of which is the LA Stage Alliance, and the other is Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. Now, LA Stage Alliance, as many of you know, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to building awareness, appreciation, and support for the performing arts in greater LA through community building, collaborative marketing, audience development, professional development to strengthen operations for members, and advocacy. You can always find them online at lastagealliance.org.
And then there's Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, which is a not-for-profit fundraising organization which funds the social service work of the Actors Fund, which provides direct assistance to any entertainment and performing arts profession dealing with AIDS, HIV, or HIV-related issues, and also awards grants twice a year to hundreds of AIDS service organizations nationwide. And unlike, Paul, most other nonprofit grant-making organizations, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS must raise every single dollar of their philanthropic budget every year in order to fulfill their mission.
Yeah, and those of us that work in nonprofits, and I know Jill has too, that getting those dollars is one of God's great mysteries.
Every penny is blood money.
Yeah, you know it.
The other thing, too, I want to point out is before we get into chatting here, there's another feature we're going to be starting. The State of the Actor, our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services, has a number of services for actors, one of which is the Virtual Channel Network on Breakdown Services. They provide online programming of interest to studios, executives, filmmakers, directors, producers, writers, casting directors, agents, managers, actors, literally everyone in the entertainment industry. And through Virtual Channel Network, you can learn the best ways to work with different casting directors. You find your up-and-coming actors for your new projects. You learn how agents and managers are negotiating contracts, and who doesn't need to know that? and see your script through a writer's eyes and potentially get some great exposure for your project. So Virtual Channel Network, a shout out to Seth and Otta, who work at Virtual Channel Network.
Seth and Otta.
No,
is that
two
one
people.
Person?
No,
oh,
no.
It's two people.
Seth and Otta. Seth and Otta, yes, the famous Filipino drum major. Seth and Otta.
There's an act in that somewhere. I know
it was
that.
A Greek god. That's what it sounded like to me.
I am lactose, the intolerant.
Nicely done.
So anyway, we have we're grateful to all of those people. But one of the things I did want to say, Michael, that I found very interesting at the end of last week, after, you know, because we don't get to hear the show for about a day,
right?
Because we do it live, and then the archives are posted on the latalkradio.com.
Yes.
And I was all worried. I got to tell you, Jill, I was all worried about how I sounded. Because Michael Sterling, as Jill will attest, has the cashmere vocal cords. He sounds like Barry White. And I was worried, okay, this is what... And I knew, I said, I'm going to listen to this, and Michael Sterling is going to be Barry White, and I am going to be Nicolas Cage from Peggy Sue Got Married. It's going to be like, hello, this is Michael Sterling.
This is Paul. I'm so glad to be here for State of the Arts.
So I'm just, I tell you, I'm so delighted to hear how nasal I sound on the radio. I can't tell
really,
you.
Really. Well, Paul, you sound terrific, and yet the fact is you look good. That's what most people, you know, don't know. That
that's what we care about on the radio.
Absolutely,
too.
We do.
I have been said. I have a face for radio.
There
I
you go. I mean, you know, most radio personalities, you know, they've got the voice, right?
Right.
But they don't necessarily have the rest of it. Well, Paul has it.
It's got it
clear.
All, baby.
Yeah. Aside from the fact that my spit screen on the microphone here has to accommodate my nose, aside from that, dazzling.
That's quite a screen. Something quite to put a screen through.
Stretchy,
on
isn't it?
Yes, it is. Stretching it. And you know, Paul, here's my thing, too. I had a week talking about looks on the radio. You know, I wanted to kind of feel good and look good, you know, for it's kind of in general, isn't it? You want to feel good, look good every place you go. And I got my haircut. I got my haircut today. And this is a quick story. I didn't, my regular person, who's just a barber, an Italian barber at Archie's Barbershop.
Mm-hmm. Sure Italian barber, what are the odds?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Looks good.
And but the one thing that he does so well is cut my hair the way I tell him to cut it. But the exception if I vary from that description. And so this week, I had a big opening last night at my nightclub, and I wanted to have a nice haircut, and I wanted to be a little more contemporary.
Aha. Uh-huh.
4-year anniversary of the club, and so uh-huh. I go, where do I go? I go to a place in the San Fernando Valley, in Sherman Oaks, in Studio City, somewhere in between there. That is a rock and roll haircut place. Rock and
Floyd's?
Roll is... Yes,
you
said
went
it.
To Floyd's?
I wasn't going to say it, but you said it, so now you know. Floyd's Barbershop.
Which provides excellent haircuts, by the way.
Excepting yesterday. Yeah, excepting yesterday. And the young lady that cut my hair will remain nameless for the rest of her life, actually. And I feel like I have... You know those... When you were a kid... You know when you get your hair cut, you have a sensation comes over you. I think it's a temperature, actually, that comes over you. You know, your face feels larger than you know, it's like a beach ball, right? And your lips feel like those wax lips, you know, when you were kids.
What happens to you at the barbershop?
Well, I don't know. This is what I'm putting it out there for.
Anybody? Well, so much of your face is out now.
And I'm wearing like a beanie now, and with a marine cut on the sides. What happened?
I don't think that's true at all, Mr. Convey. And I loved your work. I loved your work on Match Game.
It's kind of a Convey-esque kind of thing.
It is.
I see Bird.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
All right. On to our reviews.
Yes.
We have three shows to review, actually, today. Michael and I, we both saw one, and we saw others individually. We both saw South Pacific at the Amundsen.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And I saw Tracers at Loft Ensemble. And, Michael, you saw, was it...
The Will Rogers Follies at the Glendale Center Theater.
Right. And so what should we start with? You want to start with Tracers?
I think so.
Okay. As I said, Tracers, this is a play about the experience of soldiers in Vietnam and their subsequent experiences as veterans of that war. It's being presented at the L.A. Fringe Festival, Loft Ensemble, actually. Loft Ensemble is the group that's doing it. It's directed by Loft Ensemble Artistic Director Christina Howard. And, you know, there are a number of sort of seminal Vietnam plays, a lot of them by David Rabe. Basic Training of Pablo Hummel is one. Sticks and Bones, Streamers is another. And one of the reasons that I really enjoy Tracers, I read the script years ago, and what's so unique about it is that it wasn't written by one person. It was conceived by John DeFusco, but it was written by the original cast, and the original cast was comprised entirely of actors who were also Vietnam veterans. So they sort of built it together, almost, I would imagine, sort of a workshop format.
Similar to a chorus line.
Yeah, just like a chorus line, except with guns. That's it. This particular production, and, you know, when it was written 30 years ago. And
I remember.
At that time, there was not a lot of material, theatrical material out about Vietnam. And since then, you know, there have been, you know, significantly more. So what I was interested to see, especially with a cast of young actors, are we going to see an accurate depiction of the author's intention, or are we going to see performers that are sort of unknowingly or blindly parroting their perception of Vietnam through popular culture? We're going to see people that are doing, you know, Apocalypse Now, Platoon-type characters, and that is so not the case in this production. The cast is uniformly excellent. The young actors are just, it's incredible ensemble work. It's an incredibly frenetic, manic production. You lose about 5 pounds just watching this show.
Wow.
Because, I mean, the whole lead-in, what would qualify as a pre-show, which actually cheapens it to call it a pre-show, but they're doing their calisthenics while you're coming in. They must do it for 20-25 minutes.
Oh my God, in heaven.
While you're just, you know, coming into the theater and getting seated, which is also a great mood establisher.
Well, for
you
sure,
know?
Yeah.
And it is unfair to single anybody out in this production because the cast is so uniformly excellent, as I said. But there are, I want to call special attention to Tucker Smallwood, who plays Sergeant Williams, himself a Vietnam veteran, who brings his own unique perspective to it, and a tremendous poignancy to it as well. And a young actor named Matt McCroskey, who played, I believe, the character Dinky Dow is the character.
I like Stinky Dow.
That's a different show. But he was especially effective, and I thought it was very impressive, an actor of his age, to do his portrayal of the older character, of himself as a veteran, as a young soldier, but also as a veteran. It was very, very moving. And but like I said, I almost don't want to single any individual performers out because it's so uniformly great. Reservations for that show, 213-680-0392, and their website is loftensemble.com. Highly recommended, Tracers by Loft Ensemble.
Sounds like it. We should get there.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Conversely, I was at the Glendale Center Theater over the weekend to see a show that is not done very often and hasn't been in Los Angeles for years, and it was done on Broadway, called The Will Rogers Follies. You know of that, Jill?
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
Beautiful musical. And I'm going to clear my throat for 1 second. So hang on 1 second. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. I wanted to just tell you that The Will Rogers Follies, first of all, being at the Glendale Center Theater is an amazing experience, because this is a theater, it's a gem of a theater that sits in beautiful Glendale, right in the heart of downtown, and it seats approximately 350 people.
Oh, I love that size.
In the round. Gorgeous building, top-notch productions, you know, I mean, they're in favor with equity, they do equity contracts at the theater. A lot of actors don't know that, by the way.
I didn't
but
know.
More importantly, it is the longest continuously running center stage theater in the country. And it's never lost sight of their ideals, which are reflected by their ongoing audiences, which the subscription base at this theater is huge. However, I digress just a little bit, but it's important for me to tell everybody to support theater on this level, you know?
Yeah.
Will Rogers Follies, in the early 20th century, you know, the Ziegfeld Follies and reviews like it were unabashed, you know, pleasers with the audiences. And they simply, their aim was simply to dazzle and delight and amuse, and that means by whatever it took, whether it was comics or singers or dog acts, magicians, especially in a Florence Ziegfeld show. And what was that that was so famous? It was, you got it, Jill. She's, if you could only see, ladies and gentlemen, gorgeously clad girls. Girls, girls.
Jill just sort of, in the studio, just sort of, let's just say, shared her pulchritude. Is that a good way to put it?
Is that what they're calling it these days?
Yes. My pulchritude. It's shaking, baby.
The book by Peter Stone, the Glendale Center Theater, is in production of this beautiful musical based on the life of one of America's best loved entertainers and humorists. It's just that. It fully captures the era's spirit of fun and frivolity and lavishness, and uses the follies which he often headlined to allow him, the character Will Rogers, to describe episodes in his life in the form of one big production number.
So there is a storyline through it. It's not just like vignettes, there's actually a storyline about his life.
Yeah, absolutely.
In this Follies format.
Absolutely.
Oh, cool.
Direction and choreography by Orlando Alexander. Heartfelt and specific and precise.
Oh, really? I would never have thought to go. I want to go now.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was much more, just more like a review. I didn't realize that it was almost like
a life in review.
Right.
That's for sure. And R-E-V-U-E in that sense.
Uh-huh.
But all of the, when they do the musicals, which, by the way, 8 shows a year, so 4 of the shows are musicals, 4 are plays, comedies, and or dramas. And they use, in the theater for the musicals, pre-recorded tracks of the music. And it, because the space, you know, it's in the round, so the stage is a relatively small area. So it is phenomenal to see how they use the space in the theater.
And what they accomplish in such a small space.
And with and this was no short cast. This
and you never felt like you couldn't see, even though you were on the other side?
Oh, no. You see everywhere. There's no vantage point that's not good.
Fabulous.
A musical direction by Stephen Applegate, pumped the vocal powers into the tracks and the fine, dancers and singing ensemble. And then the leads, and I must point out just a couple of things about them. Danny Michaels, in the role of Will Rogers, captures much of his, laconic delivery and his easy charm. And within 15 minutes, Michaels has 350 people sitting right here in the palm of his hand.
Wow.
He is so brilliant in this role. Rich vocals, coupled with his innate acting skills, and he superbly captures, the spirit of Will Rogers. And the always thrilling Victoria Strong as his wife, her lush voice, it just strikes gold. And ladies and gentlemen, really, go see this show. You will do yourself a personal favor. You'll learn about a great American. And I'm not going to tell you more about the story because you do need to go and see it.
Okay. All right. Well,
so that's my review of Will Rogers' Follies at the Glendale Center Theater. For tickets, call area code 818-244-8481.
Great. Okay. Michael, why don't you tell them the other show that we stumbled in on? Separate nights, but we were both there.
I will indeed. We had the great pleasure of reviewing South Pacific.
Oh, I really want to see that.
Yes, at the Amundsen Theater, downtown Los Angeles.
Done it twice, seen it 6 times.
Well, you know what?
Here's
the interesting thing, Joe. Paul and I were discussing this at lunch earlier today. Paul has not seen it ever before. He did not see the movie.
Not before this production.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I'd never seen it.
But you've seen it. You said,
I've seen it
a half dozen times in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And seeing it at the national tour, this is the national tour from the 2008 Lincoln Center production,
right,
which won 7 Tony Awards that year. This is the Los Angeles sit down, and it was like seeing it for the very first time.
Okay. Now, Joe, you have seen South Pacific, but you haven't seen this production.
No, I meant to see it with Kelly O'Hara back in New York,
but
I didn't see it.
But it's here until the 17th and
July.
17th of July, and I totally agree with Michael on this.
I'm going to bring my daughter.
I want her
to see it.
Oh, and you know what? It's like Michael and I were talking about it earlier. It's like you don't, they don't shy away from, I was worried that it would be in some way PC-ified, politically, because it is, racism is a theme in it. And it was like you were watching it at that time. It had that weight, I thought. I was really impressed by how
I heard they put new stuff in from the original
they had taken out.
Yes. Interesting story, since it first arrived on Broadway in 1949.
Uh-huh.
1949, now think about that. 61 years ago, South Pacific, it drifted kind of into the realm, if you will, of a grass skirt musical. And this director, Bartlett, Mr. Cher, in a recent interview said the show's character changed drastically through the years, but it didn't start that way, and the people that had lived through that war brought to it the truth. But over that time, the truth simply lost its traction. And so thanks to Bartlett Sher, who had access to the archives of the Rodgers and Hammerstein's estate, he was able to find scenes that had been cut from the original production and dialogue that had been cut from the original production, only to further clarify and add to this production what has now become even more relevant and more specific at the same time to the time and place of the storyline. So it's so stunning. It's so rejuvenated. And everything about it, from the sets to the actors, certainly Rod Gilfrey, who you enjoyed, Paul, as Emil Debeck, comes from the opera world. And he's a star in that world, and he's crossed over to musical theater. And when you hear him sing "This Nearly Was Mine,"
and "Some Enchanted Evening,"
Evening,
you wouldn't think there could be a new interpretation of that song, but it's just very moving.
There's not a dry eye in the place. I mean, I know I wasn't. And also Carmen Cusack's take on Nellie Forbush.
Yeah.
She is amazing. Her this Southern take that she has is like nothing I've ever heard before, and I was totally captivated by this.
I was especially impressed by how they filled that room, because the Amundsen is a tough room. I mean, it's a barn for one thing, but just the height of that proscenium is just so massive, and what they did with the maps and the transparencies on the maps, that were really just it was very, very. I mean, it was striking visually with the. Almost like the Venetian effect, Venetian blind effect. I always hate to comment on shows and go, and the scenery was gorgeous.
And I love those lights, the way the thing with the blue.
You kids were having so much fun up there. But no, it was very beautifully executed and really, really lovely.
And some other fine performances very quickly. We just have a moment, but Keila Settle as Bloody Mary, my God, what a performance this woman gave, a young woman who gave such a brilliant and an old soul performance to this role. And Anderson Davis, who plays Lieutenant Cable. And I must say, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that are planning to go see South Pacific, please know that Rod Gilfrey is in it through the 20th of June, and as of June 22nd through July 17th, David Pitzinger comes into the company playing Emil. He just finished it on Broadway recently. Go see South Pacific.
Highly recommended. So we have really highly recommended across the board. We
three
have Tracers at Loft Ensemble. We have Will Rogers Follies
in
Greendale.
Right. That's
and
right.
We have the other one, which will not always be the case.
That's may, right.
You know, these are. It's not like we're always going to mail out our love letters.
The important thing is, I think it's important for everyone listening to this program and supporting us is go to the theater. Support the arts in any way, good, bad, or indifferent, because you never know, right?
Yes.
You never know until you get there.
And I just love, and one of the things is a pet peeve of mine is that, you know, people that do plays in town, they're just like, and no one came to my show. No one came to my show. It's like, well, how many shows have you attended in the past year? It's like, one. Okay. We are coming up on, I'm going to be calling Carol Channing.
Exciting.
Yes,
Carol
it is.
Channing?
Yes.
The
Carol Channing.
Wow.
And I'm learning the phone architecture here. So if I screw something up, just hum quietly to yourself, or Jill will present her pulchritude again. So let's give Miss Channing a call and
indeed.
See if she is there. So we're through the old Skype on the computer here.
The old Skype. We're referring to the old
and,
Skype.
I believe that's going through.
Yeah, take your finger off. Hello.
Hello, it's Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley from State of the Arts calling for Carol Channing.
And I'm here too, Carol.
Hello,
oh
Carol.
My God, Carol.
Carol, it is a singular delight to talk to you. We are so delighted to have you on one of our inaugural shows, and we're very, very grateful you took the time to talk to us today.
Oh, I'm just delighted to be on your show, Michael and Paul.
Michael and Paul, and you know, Carol, I'm going to remind you of this because you and I first met via a former client of mine, one of the great directors of theater and nightclub acts in the country, the late Joe Layton, introduced us originally. And then you and I had also had the pleasure of working on a a benefit together in Los Angeles for shortly following the 1994 earthquake, and it was called the Achy Quakey Benefit at Paramount Studios. Do you remember that?
No, I don't. Now, what were we, the first one now? You say the first one, what was the first one?
Joe Layton, no. The famous director.
Joe Layton, yes.
Dear Joe.
Of course.
He introduced us.
Oh, we had a smash hit Broadway show in London.
Yes, you did. You did.
Yes. Carol and her 10 Stout-Hearted Men.
Perfect title for you. And you know,
Joe came out. They were the craziest looking people you ever saw.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
And everybody went crazy about the 10 Stout-Hearted Men and me, but they all got invited to the fancy Chesterfield Club and all that in London.
Wow. Well, I wish I would have been around to see that at that time. Everyone that's listening, of course, today, Carol, knows you from the iconic role that you put on Broadway as Dolly Levi in Hello, Dolly. And if anybody ever had a chance to see Miss Channing do that role, it's something you'll remember for the rest of your life.
Carol, oh, tell me, are we on the air yet?
We are on the air.
Oh, we've been on the air for 5 minutes.
Okay. No kidding.
Yeah,
no kidding.
This is the magic.
Well, I have to tell you first, thank you for asking us to be on your State of the Arts.
Yes.
This is Harry. This is my husband. He does the nitty gritty, and he does the. We'll tell you all about it if you want to know.
And of course we do, Carol. The two of you run a foundation. You could tell us about that, an Endowment for the Arts Foundation. Am I correct?
Well, is this Michael or am I talking to you?
This is Paul, but
which
it doesn't really matter.
Michael?
We're interchangeable.
Yep. Oh, you're interchangeable. Oh, all right, Paul. we'll just say Paul and Michael. I gotta update you. We've got a congressional bill in the House of Representatives, of course, and it's about arts in education, and it's submitted by Jackie Spear she's in the San Francisco area, and we're all dear friends of hers, and hopefully she's a dear friend of ours, as we know. But in any case, we've got a producer-director to do a telethon with celebrities in New York by Dori Berenstein of New York. And then we have another producer-director to do a weekly telethon, because this is for a week, every year, and it's calling upon mayors and governors and so forth to design this telethon and the selection of kids. Or kids who are taking art in school and who have become artists. And that's a separate foundation than what Carol is doing. The foundation she's involved in is to bring arts in education. If those kids can do it, we can use arts as a catalyst in education to further these kids along in their life and their disciplines and their good character as they become integral part of our culture.
Harry, you know,
it's so exciting.
I'm sorry.
We're co-founding with 5.5 million PTA members this August, and then we're also going to be
before Congress.
Yeah,
yes.
And we're going to co-partner also with all educators at a convention, and we're going to be calling upon all the organizations in the United States. But you're right now State of the Arts. You have the title and the substance to do a lot of things.
Well, you know, Harry, if I could chime in for just a moment, I want to say, first of all, thank you, of course, for bringing that up. But that is one of our intentions. One of the things that we're doing here today, it's sort of accidental that you would both be on the same show, but we have Jill Holden here. She is an actress and a theater teacher in L.A. and works for the LAUSD. And this is a issue obviously incredibly close to her heart, because Measure E is on the ballot tomorrow in Los Angeles. Measure E, and it's exactly what you're talking about. I mean, Jill, wouldn't you echo exactly what Harry's saying?
Oh my God, I can't believe you're saying this. You know, there's a Right now, there are all four art forms in every elementary school in Los Angeles. There's a theater teacher, a dance teacher, a music teacher, and a visual arts teacher. And they're cutting... They're cutting the entire program because of, you know, less money from Sacramento, unless we pass Measure E. So I'm so thrilled you brought it up.
And your first name is... I'm sorry.
Jill.
What's your first name here?
Jill.
What's your first name?
Jill.
Jill.
J-I-L. Like Jack and Jill, you know, up the hill.
Oh, like Jack and Jill.
That's the one.
Jill. Jill. Well, there's a bill, as you know, I'm sure you know, 2446, assembly bill by one of our assemblymen to take out further the importance of arts in all forms in public education. And this is a bill right now being circulated in our legislature in Sacramento. This is the most deadly thing I've ever heard of.
Deadly.
And I know that the State of the Arts and you are going to take a hard stand against this because it rams the very heart of what we're all trying to do all over the United States, all the volunteer organizations, all the foundations that have poured their heart into it.
The arts. I feel so sorry for those people that are cutting the arts. They don't know. They haven't experienced it. Jill, you've experienced it, and you, Michael, and Paul have. You have with your experience and live experience in the theater. But, see, I've been 65 years. I did some 10 shows on Broadway. Some of them were smash hits. Some of them were flops. But I did 10 shows altogether. And I found out all the artist does is recreate what was already created.
In their own sight.
In their own, and they have to get it together. And what it does is it pulls your brain into being a great president, a great scientist, it brings you into that wonderful world that is... Jill, you know what I'm talking about.
Einstein said it very clearly. All the scientists have said it. Churchill said it. Who were the two greatest men of the 20th century? It was Churchill and Einstein. Both are great artists. They weren't just artists. They were great artists.
Right.
And they knew the value of art. The second president we had, John Adams. But more than that, Gerald, we can coalesce. We can co-partner. Carol and I are 90 years old. She's going to be 90 in January. I'm 90 already.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we can do this for a few more years. We know we can. We've got the energy. We've got the knowledge. We've got the drive. We've got all of that. But somewhere along the line, this has to take on a life of its own. We've got celebrities lining up already excited about it, both in New York and here in your area. I think that when we all get together and we come together and we do this thing, this is bigger than anybody. It's bigger than Carol. It's bigger than all of us. But it's something that has to be done in the United States to save the future of this country. And if we don't save our children who are falling through the cracks of this nation,
the dropouts,
and all
and
these
the
other things that go with it.
And the arts keep those kids in school, don't they?
We've got to do it.
The amount of dropouts.
And it's up to people like us, you and me, and you know, Michael, and all.
If they haven't experienced it, they don't believe it. But the arts are fertilizer on the brain for scientists. What's his name? Einstein said.
How
did you get the theory
of relativity?
Yeah, and he said, I just stayed at it longer. I'm not smarter than
that. He saw the infinite harmony of the universe. And he said, even as great as the theory of relativity is, the Mona Lisa is greater because it lifts the spirit. It drives our heart. It is our life.
I'm telling you, Harry, you and Carol should take it on the road. You guys are in perfect harmony over there right now. It sounds like you've worked together before.
We got it started in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
They have a great governor there, John Lynch, and his wife, who's a fine surgeon. And they're intelligent enough, these poor slobs, who don't realize that the arts are that important is because their lives are so dull. They think it's only about...
Even the Governor Richardson of New Mexico, look at what they've got is arts. We brought arts to schools here in California, little towns of no place, nowhere, and they're all Latinos. And we said, look, here you come to the United States of America from a country that had singing and dancing and all the arts. And here you come to the United States, and they rip them away from you. So we bought the musical instruments, and it's the only art form they
brand
have.
New instruments. They made a deal with a lady in New York, and she sent them brand new instruments. And I had the privilege of listening to them open them up. Oh, Jill, you would have been on.
Gee, I'm glad you invited us on this program. Because we can help. You can help us. And we can march into this battle for our children. These are our children. I don't care who they are.
Absolutely.
They're our children. They belong to us. And we need to give them the best. They are not getting the best of the United States. And I got to say one more thing. Our children in this country have the most creative, the most imaginative kids. Do you ever see a kid do graffiti on the wall? The only reason he does that because he wants to identify himself. I can do that. I can do something. I am something. Listen to me. I want to do something. I want to create something. It's mine. I can identify. And we don't understand that. They're crying out. They're crying out for this help. All of you, Michael, Paul, Gerald, all of us have got to join in this, and Jill. And we're going to do it. If it's the last thing, before we go, Carol and I have dedicated ourselves to this.
It's got to be for the fall of the Holy Roman Empire.
You are going to hear from the arts branch of LA Unified. I'm going to turn them on to you.
Harry, I want to know why you haven't run for governor of California.
Hell, why not president of the United States, right?
Because I don't know why either. I was a little lonely consulate in this city, and I'm choked trying to motivate. And, Paul and Michael and Jill, oh, my gosh, what a privilege to talk to you and you're allowing us to use your program as a catalyst to people to sound this alarm. We are committed to help. We bailed out everybody but our kids, and our kids we keep stealing from them. We keep taking away. We're taking away their civil rights. First, it's in the Constitution that every child shall have a full and adequate education, and then we tear it apart.
This is
a violation of their civil rights, but
it's
we're not going to go that route.
Isn't it?
I'm sorry, say that again, Jill, you made a good point.
It's about access to the arts. And so wealthy neighborhoods can have access because the parents are taking them, and then they go and they're under... But the other neighborhoods do not have access, and it's equal rights. I totally agree. It's
Amen.
An equal rights
Amen.
Issue.
Amen. You're absolutely right.
And public schools are where the boy with the raw talent comes
from. That's where
right
I work.
Out.
I just
right.
came from my school. I've left school at 3 o'clock to come over here. I'm right there in the public schools.
Right, Harry and Carol, I think you'll find this.
You know, Carol and I met when we were only 13 and 12. And what do you think it was that bound us? It was the arts. My father was an immigrant. He only had a sixth grade education. God love him. He worked as a tailor in San Francisco in 1933. I was going to Aptus Junior High School, and I met Carol Channing. And it changed my
love
life.
Love at first sight?
I'm not an artist. I am not. I don't pretend to be. I know this value.
He appreciates art like nobody else. But Armenians do that. They buy a library or a museum, the first money they make for the town they're in. That's the way they think. They're civic-minded.
Well.
We've got to get... But
oh gosh!
Gee,
well, I want to tell you.
We don't get it. I had the privilege of talking to Now shut us up when we're...
Yes, please shut us up, will you please?
Well, let me ask you one more thing, because all of these things are obviously very, very important, but we only have a minute or two more. But I wanted to address one more thing that I'm seeing in your material here, Carol, about you were inducted into the Smithsonian Institute along with eight other... Michael, you told me about this.
Yes.
Eight other legendary ladies of stage and screen, and we just wanted to applaud you for that accomplishment. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? I know it is, because I do comedy. You know?
No kidding.
And most people don't realize that comedy's an art, too.
Oh, my goodness.
But, boy, exercising it, that's what I've had the privilege of doing for 65 years on Broadway. And it changes everything. We discovered poetry together, Harry and I, and... Boy, we just ran away with it, and our grades went up like crazy. Don't let anybody tell you it isn't fertilizer on the brain. All of a sudden, I understood things like human biology, sociology, things that have nothing to do with seemingly with the arts. And I began understanding, and so did Harry, and he graduated best all-round student and athlete, and the next year I got the same award because we were crazy about poetry. What of the wing that yearns to soar, the feet that plead to dance, shall not our heart hope long and more to master circumstance? And that's what we...
I think we just lost Carol. There seems to be a little glitch. I'm going to try calling her again.
In the middle of her telling poetry, you're getting her back.
We're calling her back. We're getting emotional here because they're so amazingly impassioned.
Extraordinary.
Let's see if she picks up.
Go ahead.
Hello, you still there?
Yeah, Carol hit the wrong button. I hit the wrong button.
Oh, I got excited
and I got
to gesturing. I can just see it.
You see what happens, Carol? You're so passionate that you're gesticulating so wildly that you end up hanging up on people.
That's exactly what happened. Yes.
Well, one more thing. We're going back
to
New York.
Really, what is it? And that's Edna St. Vincent Millay. And we fell in love with her, Milton Keats and Shelley and all that. Boy, we couldn't wait to get to school. It affected all our other grades.
We're going back to New York on the 21st of July next month, and we're going to be on some of the national television networks. And we're going to be talking about this very subject, and also Carol produced an album about what she and her father sang when they were little, when she was little, and it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for us to expand the things that, and you know what you're doing. What you're doing, I haven't heard of another organization such as the State of the Arts. And what you're doing is you're heralding in the things that need to be done in education. And see, we're not forgetting the teachers. We can also bring arts back in the schools. But look at the hundreds, look at the thousands of art teachers that have been vacated from their position. And we need to bring new teachers into this. And so we're looking at that opportunity when we have the telethon to raise money to give scholarships both to artists, potential artists, and to school teachers.
I'm calling you tomorrow. So can I get your home phone?
Along those lines, Harry, I want to thank you both for coming. We want to make sure that we get the website for your foundation out there. We have drchanningfoundation.org. That's drchanningfoundation.org. And I'm sorry that we have to sign off now because we do want to chat with Jill about this Measure E that's on the ballot tomorrow. But we're very, very grateful. And I know I speak to Michael.
We love you, Carol. May God be with you tomorrow. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Harry.
It's been extraordinary to have you, and God bless you and your passion that started when you were such a young, both of you, such a young couple, and here today at the ages you are. I only hope that I am as passionate as you are.
We applaud you. We applaud you. Thank you so much.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We'll be praying for you.
Thank you very much.
Bless you. All right. Bye now.
Okay,
that was incredible.
My God.
Yes.
Oh my God.
You didn't know that you'd come on our show and then Carol Channing and her husband would do the commercial
for you. My entire pitch. I have nothing to say. Clearly.
Well, actually, take a minute here, Joe, and tell us exactly, specifically, what this means, Measure E.
Well, Measure E is a parcel tax. It's $100 a year for everyone who owns a home. That's $8 a month, 27 cents a day, because we need money to counteract all the cuts that have happened to education from Sacramento because of the recession and because of many other things. There have been $500 million worth of cuts to LA Unified in the last 2 years. $500 million.
That's extraordinary.
And right now, as I said before, we have this arts program in every elementary school, has a music teacher, a dance teacher, visual arts, and a theater teacher. The kids see us once a week, the whole year, and our program is being cut completely, 50% this year and 100% next year.
Wow.
To balance the budget, unless this Measure E passes. And Measure E is a temporary measure, only for 4 years, hopefully to get us through this rough time and to keep funding the arts in the schools
and
of Los Angeles.
And it works out to about, what, 27 cents a day?
27 cents a day, yes. like a sip of a latte.
And you also, I remember you mentioned earlier, because we discussed it, you said that the elderly and people who can't afford it will not be subject
right,
to it.
Over 65, unless they have plenty, you know, if they
So, Paul, you're
ask.
Off the hook.
Yeah, I'm off the hook, right.
Yes, can get a waiver. And it's not just the arts program, though that's what we're pushing. Also, librarians. Libraries are being completely closed down, school after school. Yeah. No librarian. So there's no library. I mean, how can you have a school with no library and no librarian? Nurses, as it is, there's a nurse once a week, but they're going to cut that completely so there are no nurses. They want to teach teachers how to do things like give the insulin and, you know, some of the things that that nurses do. They want to teach us how to do that so we can be there.
That's not what you signed up for.
That's not what
no.
And we need a nurse.
Absolutely.
It's not safe.
And a couple other things that are being funded by this $92 million that will be raised by Measure E. So if you support arts in schools in LA Unified, please vote yes on Measure E. Yes on E.
If you don't, Jill knows where you live. She's coming to get you.
Listen to Carol Channing and her husband.
Exactly.
It's the most important thing in the world.
And I tell you, it was just like, I can't believe that... Collectively, those two are 180 years old.
Yes.
Oh,
and that,
my.
And they have more energy than I do, which, granted, I don't set the bar very high.
I'm going over. Where do they? I got to meet them, clearly.
Well, we have to have them back on. We have to have them back on when they're not on a speakerphone. That was the only thing. They were on a speakerphone. So
a little delay.
We were talking to them.
Amazing. You know, Paul, we have an arts calendar that we need to pay attention to.
Yes, we do.
Bring to our listeners.
Can I kick that off?
You may.
Now playing through June 27th is the Blank Theater Company's 18th Annual Nationwide Young Playwrights Festival, the Stella Adler Theater.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yes, as have I.
I've had students in that. Wonderful stuff.
Dedicated to developing and producing plays and musicals by playwrights 19 years of age and younger. And best of all, winning playwrights get to see their work developed and performed on stage in L.A. And I want to stress, I know a couple of people in this. My friend Warren Davis is involved. My friend Scott Lowell from the television show Queer as Folk on Showtime. Both excellent actors and people. And it's not children's theater. It's just the playwrights are younger people. So I want to draw that distinction. Definitely.
And a shout out to Daniel Henning, who's the artistic director there with the Blank, and very involved in this program. So good work, guys, over there. Please, ladies and gentlemen, support this. Important. Also, Street Tees, billed as an evening of
Meryl Streep
monologues, performed by an all-male cast, has been extended through July 31st. After 15 weeks, get this, 15 weeks of sold-out performances at the Bang Theater in Hollywood.
That sounds
hysterical. I don't know, male cast, Bang Theater, I don't know.
One of LA's longest-running hits, Life Could Be a Dream, which I haven't seen yet, must close June 20th at the Hudson Theater in Hollywood. This 60s doo-wop musical, absolute must-see before it moves in July to the Laguna Playhouse in Laguna Beach, California.
That's right, and the winner of 9 Tony Awards, including Best Musical and the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, this singular sensation is the longest-running American Broadway musical ever. Come meet the new generation of A Chorus Line, ladies and gentlemen, at the Hollywood Pantages Theater now through June 13th.
Matt Zarley, named one of People magazine's 50 most eligible bachelor's, who coincidentally began his career on Broadway in A Chorus Line.
That's right.
This accomplished Broadway star's much-anticipated debut at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's in Studio City
will take place
for one night only, June 12th, and promises to be a highlight of the popular supper club's four-year anniversary celebration. Michael, congratulations on 4 years.
Thank you so much. And what starts as an innocent lunch between a septuagenarian mom and her two adult children degenerates into a fierce game of cat and mouse in four places. Rogue Machine Theater's darkly humorous play now through July 3rd at Theater Theater in Los Angeles.
And for further information about any productions and or events mentioned on today's Best of Show State of the Arts calendar, visit us during the week ahead of time at stateoftheartsla.com. That's stateoftheartsla.com. We are so delighted to have Jill here. Thank you so much.
Theater teacher.
And the lovely Carol Channing.
Oh, my God.
And thank you all, and we will see you next week.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.